Ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulously little fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island-chained nation in the sunny slave South Pacific, the Agenda 21 rolling train that we like to call the island jewel of New Zealand. Oh yes, it's so beautiful. It's so gorgeous, especially when you have criminal bankster elite scumbaggery running the entire country into the ground, kind of as if it was like a titanic struggle against an iceberg dotted around and sinking, very, very badly sinking to the bottom of the ground floor, where there will be nothing left for people to live in, no houses, no nothing. That's New Zealand. Welcome. I love this country. You kick people out of their homes after they've been living there for goodness knows how long. And also, you get criminal bankster elite scumbaggery to run the country into the ground. I love it. Can we repeat that one more time? No, I don't think it's absolutely necessary. But we'll get some elaboration on it instead from my very special guest, Penny Bride. Penny, welcome to the program.
Oh, g'day, Vinny.
Now, can you explain to people just a little bit about who you are and what you do, and then we'll get into some of the news that you've been covering of late.
Okay. Yeah, my name's Penny Bright, and I'm media spokesperson for a group called the Water Pressure Group, and that's where things pretty much started off, fighting against the commercialisation and privatisation of water services and also user pays. And then, yeah, through that got involved in the council and then discovered how little transparency and accountability we had, and now I've ended up being an anti-corruption campaigner. I've been to two significant anti-corruption conferences, and New Zealand's perceived to be the least corrupt country in the world, which has got to be the biggest steaming pile of the proverbial you've ever heard in your life. But there's been some really important breakthroughs over this last month on that front, actually. Yeah.
Okay, well, let's go into it there. What exactly has been uncovered and what have you been up to the last month?
Well, over this last month, first of all, finally got a mainstream media hit on the fact that I've got a petition before the Commerce Select Committee, which is calling for an inquiry into basically how come two directors of this finance company, Hulich Wealth Management, how come they weren't charged for signing registered prospectuses which contained untrue statements? Because under New Zealand law, under the Securities Act, that is a strict liability offence. If you sign a prospectus which contains an untrue statement, you've committed an offence, end of story. And your only defence to that offence was that at the time of signing, you didn't know it was an untrue statement. Well, right now, in the country that's perceived to be the least corrupt in the world, the balance of power is effectively being held by someone who, in my opinion, is a yet-to-be-convicted white-collar criminal, and that is John Banks, the current leader of the ACT Party and the ACT Member of Parliament for Epsom. And so this is quite significant because what happened was, during the election campaign last year, I actually stood in Epsom against John Banks as a sort of public watchdog candidate, and I was trying to help shine a huge public spotlight on the fact that how come this one law for all, which was ACT Party policy, didn't apply to the ACT leader and this ACT MP, ACT candidate for Epsom. And what happened was that, I mean, I've been part of the Occupy Auckland movement, and what happened was a little group of us, we'd march off from Aotea Square where we'd been protesting, camping, and we marched on the offices of the Finance Markets Authority and handed over a letter, please lay charges against John Banks and Don Brash. And they put it in writing, they refused to do so. Then we marched about a week later on the offices of the Serious Fraud Office and asked them to apply one law for all against John Banks and Don Brash, and they put it in writing that they'd refused to do so. And then after Christmas, I sent a letter to the Auckland District Commander of Police asking that the police lay charges against John Banks and Don Brash, and they put in writing that they wouldn't either. So you've got to ask yourself, how is it that these two former directors haven't had the one law for all that they claim should apply to everybody else apply to them. Is it a form of corrupt political protection because Prime Minister John Key is dependent on that one vote of John Banks in order to maintain the balance of power, and they're his mates? Because Don Brash, he used to be the governor of the Reserve Bank of New Zealand, and John Banks claimed that he had 30 years commercial experience. Well, you can't have it both ways. You can't say, mum and dad investors, trust us, we know what we're doing, give us your money, and then next minute, oh shit, we didn't know what we were doing. How's that work? So anyway, so right now, this petition calling for an inquiry into prosecutions, or lack thereof, is an item of business before the Commerce Select Committee. And what's happening is in New Zealand, there are an increasing number of directors of other collapsed finance companies that are facing charges. And although some of the penalties may seem to be quite slack, which they are, at least they've been charged. So it's becoming increasingly untenable for charges not to be laid against John Banks and Don Brash. So it's quite exciting stuff. Yeah, so that's one thing. So we got a big article in the paper about petition stalks Banks and Brash. So first time ever to get mainstream media coverage. And then what's happened is subsequently there have been other developments, because during the Epsom election campaign, I campaigned on an action plan to prevent corruption, white-collar crime and corporate welfare. And where we've had a couple of king hits is the fact that New Zealand, although we're perceived to be the least corrupt country in the world, according to Transparency International's Corruption Perception Index, New Zealand hasn't even ratified the UN Convention Against Corruption. And the reason why New Zealand hasn't ratified the UN Convention Against Corruption is because our domestic legislative framework isn't yet in place. So it's a bit of a no-brainer. How on earth can we be the least corrupt country in the world if we haven't got a legislative framework in place to help stop corruption?
We don't have any protections virtually of any kind in this country. I mean, and it even goes down to, instead of just politicians and white-collar criminals being able to get away with whatever they want because they know the judges or they know the lawyers or whatever, working around behind the scenes, there's also the point with, even so far as police complaints get taken by other police.
Well, I know. But, I mean, so some major stuff here. I mean, how many people realise that New Zealand, perceived to be the least corrupt country in the world, our MPs don't have an enforceable code of conduct? They make the rules for everybody else, but they themselves don't have an enforceable code of conduct, and neither do our judges. I mean, judges in New Zealand are out of control. They don't have an enforceable code of conduct. There's no register of pecuniary interests so that you can help avoid conflicts of interest with judges. And, of course, that's why a former Supreme Court judge was forced to resign in the end, because one of the counsel appearing before him was his business partner and he didn't recuse himself. Well, I mean, hello. I mean, how dodgy is that? And it was only when the judiciary actually had a bit of a split amongst themselves that the pressure built up to actually force this judge to resign. But a register of pecuniary interest where people can see, and it's available for public scrutiny, that helps to safeguard against these conflicts of interest. Because how can you guard against conflicts of interest if the interests are not declared and publicly available? So another big breakthrough has been, we've just recently got mainstream media coverage on the fact that our local government politicians, they don't have a register of pecuniary interest. Our MPs do, and that's available on our New Zealand government website, parliamentary website, so you can check. It's not a wealth register, so you don't know how many shares they've got, but you can see whether or not they do have shares in companies or the names of trust they're involved in. Well, that doesn't apply to local government politicians. So how dodgy is that? And when you combine that with the fact that we don't know where our public money is going, because the devil's in the detail, and we don't get the devilish detail. The question is, what are the names of the consultants or contractors? What is the scope of the contract? What is the term of the contract? And what is the value of the contract? And why information publicly available?
Now, what I love, Penny, is that these questions, they should be simple answers, right? We paid this guy this much for this job.
Yeah.
And it's carrying on for this amount of time, right? You'd figure that would be the stock standard practice of getting any kind of business done, but these people don't. And that just raises a huge red flag right there in the first place, either that they're completely incompetent or that they're completely corrupt.
Well, what's interesting is that elected representatives at local government level, they swear an oath. There's a public swearing-in ceremony where they swear an oath to the public, you know, to carry out their duties impartially and in the best interests of whatever area that they're from, and to follow the law and exercise prudent stewardship. But, I mean, how can you exercise prudent stewardship when you don't even know where the money's going? Because I've done a lot of research on this, and back in the days of Auckland City Council, what I discovered to my horror was that when you do all this contracting out, what happens is there's two layers of bureaucracy that you wouldn't normally have, because what happens is you have the contractors, but then you have to have contract management. And then you get these highly paid consultants that act as project managers of the works consultants. So instead of having a council works department where, you know, okay, the road needs fixing, will you get out there and get on with it? You have this layer upon layer of people getting huge amounts of money, all these private piggies in the middle with their snouts in our public trough. And, of course, the result is that rates, local body taxes, go up, not down. So all this crap that, you know, public is bad, private is good, and it's more efficient. Efficient is just corporate speak, because we want to get our filthy hands on it. So
well,
anyway,
I would suppose that's why they called Hewlett Wealth Management, because they managed to steal everybody's wealth.
Well, it's just really interesting, because in New Zealand, again, perceived to be the least corrupt country in the world, there's been over 60 collapsed finance companies since 2006. And what happened was that the old Securities Commission was deemed to be completely and utterly bloody useless. That's why it was replaced by this new Broome Finance Markets Authority. Well, when I went to the Finance Markets Authority and asked how come Banks and Brash hadn't been charged, they relied on the previous decision from the old Securities Commission. So you've got to ask yourself, well, if you're the new Broome, why aren't you independently reviewing the decision from the useless old group? Why are you relying on them? And then I find out that there's a number of people that actually transferred over from the old useless body to the new, supposedly not so useless body. So I've got a Dynamite Official Information Act request, which I'm waiting for, to find out upon whose legal advice were they relying to say, oh, no, there's no basis to charge, you know, this John Banks and Don Brash. Well, hello, who made this decision? And why? So the pressure is building up, and it's marvellous. But when it coming back to local government registers of interest, what I also discovered in my previous research was that in actual fact, you need to check the level of delegated authority, because a number of contracts up to a certain value, it's not elected representatives that sign them off. It's council staff or contractors or consultants or whatever. So the question has to be, why are there not registers of interest for any person that's responsible for property or procurement to double check for any possible conflicts of interest? And why isn't that information publicly available?
See, yeah. a drug dealer would never do business like this. You know, like you wouldn't give your drugs to somebody else and then just let them hold on to it and then come back to you without you weighing it again to make sure there's nothing missing. On the other hand, but when it comes, and that's criminals doing proper business. But when you have a look at the government, when you have a look at the government trying to allegedly do proper business, not being criminals, they do it even worse and dumber than any amount of drug messed up gang quandry mofos could ever do.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't know anything about that, of course, Vinny.
Which comes down to my point that I've made on the show many times, is that the people in government are simply on crack. I mean, have a look at the symptoms of the people that are on crack, okay? Constantly lying all the time, stealing stuff all the time to pay for their habits. They make stuff up to cover their ass. They try and hide what they do from other people. I mean, if that's not government policy it's either government policy or the symptoms of somebody that's on a huge, huge quantity of crack, and they seem to be very similar.
Well, that's an interesting point. I mean, I'm, you know, sort of simple revolting peasant and of the view that surely the public have got a right to know exactly where our public money is being spent. Is that not a fair question? I mean, if we're supposed to have open, transparent and democratically accountable government, centrally and locally, then why can't we find out exactly where the money's being spent?
Yeah, it's the old adage, follow that money. If you follow the money, it usually winds up leading to the source of the scumbaggery. You listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest from Auckland is Penny Bright, waterpressure.wordpress.com. You can call in, ladies and gentlemen, 218-339-8525. Back in a minute. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We're excited to get this into the Vinnie Eastwood Show here for you. We seem to have lost our guest, Penny Bright. She just kind of got disconnected there for a minute, so hopefully we can get the board up to bring her back up, if that's at all possible. Now, what I was talking about earlier on the show about the old Agenda 21 and what have you, you have a look at the government policies, local government, and I'm sure everybody can basically relate to this no matter which part of the world you're in. What I find is that it's so obvious once you know what you're looking for that you wonder how people can't see it. And it's simply because they don't know, and you do. And you simply sit there and you get more frustrated the fact that other people don't know, and you do. You know, you get angry with these people because, basically, they just don't understand. You're sitting here, and you don't know what's going on, and you're getting really increasingly even more angry because people aren't doing anything. It's this eternal circle of frustration. Why, ladies and gentlemen, why do people actually put up with this crap? It's taking a few seconds because, basically, no one anywhere has any idea how bad it can get. And so we're having a few technical difficulties here, so maybe we'd have to wait until get Penny on next segment. We're having a little bit of a problem here with the Skype, I think, man. And what I would like to do is actually kind of talk about how people can really notice, see, and identify Agenda 21 operating in your area, and it's all through local government. Okay, so I don't care whether you're in Texas, in England, or in New Zealand. The methodology works precisely the same, and I'd like to get some callers on this as well. 218-339-8525. That's 218-339-8525. Now, so if you think of local government as the power center of just your particular area, region, or whatever, you'd figure it had some kind of autonomy. It doesn't, not anymore. That's what Agenda 21 is supposed to do. It's supposed to turn all those local centres that have all the general power, you know, to collect rates from people, providing their water and power and general infrastructure and public transport, things like that. That's real power because it affects you right here, right now, in the particular area that you live. So the whole goal of Agenda 21 and ICLE, which is the group that's basically been put in place by the UN to see that this starts happening, this is the basic place that everything kind of stems from. Okay, they have a plan. Agenda 21 was signed in 1992 at the Rio Earth Summit on on Prince Charles's private yacht. Jim Bolger, the Prime Minister of New Zealand at the time, as well as George H.W. Bush, the President of the United States at the time, both were there at the Rio Earth Summit in 1992 and signed that document. So Agenda 21 is signed. We are ratified. We are kind of back up on it. And we've got Penny Bright back now. And I'm not sure how familiar you are with Agenda 21, Penny.
Probably not quite as familiar as I should be, but But in terms of the whole global agenda, I mean, it's not complicated. I mean, it's all about those with money wanting to take control over our resources and people on the planet. I mean, it ain't that complicated.
It's pretty straightforward. And that's what I find funny when people call me a conspiracy theorist for talking about this kind of stuff. It's like, yes, I'm a crazy conspiracy theorist. I believe people who have a lot of power and influence use their power and influence. I'm just absolutely nuts, aren't I?
Well, the interesting thing is in New Zealand, I mean, take our Prime Minister, Shonky John Key. I mean, you've got to ask yourself, in 2001, he was a foreign exchange advisor to the New York Federal Reserve, so you don't get much more Wall Street bankstery than that. And in 2002, next year, he sets on his career to become Prime Minister of New Zealand. Well, with all due respect, it's not complicated. John Key is a bankster. He's still a shareholder in the Bank of America. He's all about opening New Zealand up for foreign banksters and investors. It's as simple as that. And a really important example of that just happened recently. On the 21st of March, John Key, New Zealand Prime Minister, officiated at the opening of an Australian open cast coal mining company called Bathurst Resources Limited. And what they're trying to do is get resource consent to open cast coal mine on conservation estate land on the west coast. Well, the conflict of interest there is that a significant shareholder in Bathurst Resources Limited is the Bank of America. So would John Key stand to financially benefit from open cast coal mining on conservation estate land in New Zealand? Why, yes, I do believe he would. But, I mean, what happened was I sent out a press release. I've contacted the Green Party and New Zealand First and said, well, if it was good enough for National Party Minister for Minister Nick Smith to be forced to resign over a conflict of interest, which involved him signing a letter and helping someone out, which was a conflict of interest. This is surely far more significant, but it seems like it's too big and ugly and people don't quite want to go there because it's sort of enormous. Well, hello, it's a major conflict of interest. And in Australia, for example, John Key would not be allowed to openly own shares in the Bank of America. This is how corrupt we are. I mean, why do we have these business people in public positions? Where is the evidence that they know anything about public service ethics, ethos, serving the public? It seems that business people get into politics to maximise their own business opportunities, to look after themselves, their families and their mates, and never mind the public. And it's the total opposite of what people should be doing if they're elected to public office. It's the opposite.
Yeah. And this is not isolated to John Key either. Don't we also have a lot of other people within the National Party who are using public office for private gain or even getting big jobs with private companies right after being a minister, like our former Justice Minister Simon Power, right after coming out of Parliament, gets a job as what CEO of Westpac Bank? What bank does all the government's banking? Oh, yeah, that's right. It's Westpac. And then, you have a look even deeper at, say, like Pansy Wong, for instance. There was some New Zealand inventor of a really quite a revolutionary hovercraft design, and then she and her husband, Sammy Wong, took that design over to some of their business contacts in China. She was at the business meetings as a minister of parliament to give it more legitimacy, and they basically, for all intents and purposes, stole this guy's design and cut him completely out of the loop. And she's since been what happened to her? She got kicked out of Parliament as a result.
And then John Key.
It seems almost every single bit of a government policy he seems to be passing ultimately benefits himself as well. You know, didn't he pass some kind of law that made it easier for land or wine growing or something? Then it turns out he's got a winery.
That information I'm not familiar with, but I am familiar with the Pansy Wong case, because what happened was that there's a company called Shipley and Wong, remember? Jenny Shipley, former New Zealand National Party Prime Minister? Well, what happened was Shipley and Wong, the business address for that company was 735 Dannemora Road, which just happened to be Pansy Wong's electorate office address, and I took this to the Office of the Auditor General, and what did they do about it? Nothing. Well, my good friend Grace Hayden, who's another whistleblower and anti-corruption campaigner, she's initiated a petition calling for New Zealand to legislate to set up an independent commission against corruption, which is a great move. So that's another one of our main planks in terms of the action plan to prevent corruption, white-collar crime and corporate welfare. That's another step that's in place. I've actually got a live petition which is calling for an enforceable code of conduct for New Zealand judges. What else has happened very recently is the Green Party have got a private members bill pulled out of the ballot, which is for a register of lobbyists. That's huge, because in New Zealand, how do we know who's meeting the minister? Because in other countries like Australia, Canada, etc., if you're a third-party lobbyist and you're meeting, you want to get a meeting with the minister, you can't unless you're on a register of lobbyists. And so the public can have some transparency in terms of who is meeting the minister and on what. Because at the moment, apparently, there are lobbyists who have their own swipe cards to get into Parliament in Wellington. Now, how dodgy is that?
Very freaky.
Well, it is. So
it makes the whole situation rather incestuous, because then you don't know who the government is and who's running the government. It's obviously becoming less about the elected officials and more about these unelected people who just kind of have get sweetheart deals from the government and what have you, and just come on here, get tax breaks and get contracts and this kind of thing. It's almost like New Zealand is a succulent pig on a spit, and it's being rotated nicely, and these big business interests just come in every now and again, slice off a big chunk of it, and at the end, the people we get to eat last, when there's nothing left but a skeleton with a few strips of perhaps flesh, sinew, and fat left.
Well, the thing is that it's about exposing how the system works, but I tell you right now, National and ACT, they are extremely vulnerable, in my view, on issues related to corruption and white-collar crime. And over this last couple of weeks, the conflict of interest has been the words that have really picked up traction. And in my view, the thing is to continue to focus on these issues. And I believe that this is, well, because of course what's coming up in New Zealand is, there's a big push. Aotearoa New Zealand is not for sale. And there's going to be a march in Auckland on the 28th of April, starting at 3 o'clock at Britomart. And what's happening, there's a hikoi, which is like a march, Māori word for like a march, heading from up north down to Parliament. And I hope to be part of that, because what I really want to see is that this campaign against Aotearoa New Zealand not being for sale to incorporate this action plan, because it's through corruption and white collar crime that this is happening. Because who's pushing for this stuff? Who's lobbying the government? Whose interests are being served? Because the fact of the matter is that most mums and dads in New Zealand, they're struggling to pay their power bills. Never mind having spare money to invest in power companies, which we already own anyway. So it's like, it's all about looking after investors. Well, I put it to you that investors aren't the public majority, most of whom are just struggling on a week-by-week basis to pay the bills and put food on the table.
Where's the end goal for these people here? I mean, as far as I see it, have you ever heard of John Perkins, the economic hitman?
Oh, yes, I have.
So I think that's what John Key is. He's an economic hitman. He's been sent here by the bankster elite to destroy this country, to sell it out for their interests.
To me, that just seems just patently obvious. And, I mean, what gets me is the role of corporate media in terms of the spin doctoring that's accompanied John Key. I mean, you've got a Wall Street bankster who's dodgy ass, who's been known to do insider trading, because I took a private prosecution, as you know, against John Key back in 2008 over Transrail.
That was when we first met, and he's only gotten worse.
Well, exactly right. So the thing is that the opportunities for insider trading when you're the Prime Minister are absolutely enormous, don't you think? I mean, you've got access to information that pretty much nobody else has, all the intelligence service, the whole nine yards. So if your real interest or intention is to set up a country to open it up for the banksters and big overseas investors, my God, I mean, it's really scary stuff. So I just think it's really important that to absolutely focus on this conflict of interest issue. Just another point I'd like to make regarding this Bathurst Resources Limited. Now, you remember there's a whistleblower called Jacob Cohen who put out a 50-page sort of booklet, Was It Murder at Pike River Mine? And with the benefit of hindsight, that came out in sort of January last year.
We'll have to get into more of this after the break. Penny Bright is my guest. We've got one more segment with her, and then in the second hour, Roy Harlow from Rush FM in Hamilton will be joining us. So that'll be fun too. Penny Bright, ladies and gentlemen, waterpressure.wordpress.com. Call in over the break, 218-339-8525. Back in a minute. Please don't desert me. But I've never been edible. I'm a cracker, not a vegetable, fed to an extraterrestrial. The beat is so electrical, it'll pump your heart ventricles. But I bet you will eject it if I start getting intellectual. I am not welcome back. So until I can say I'm credible, I'll say that welcome I'm back, ladies and gentlemen, to the show that's all about 29 solutions for compatibility. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And I think, I'm currently the only Kiwi with an American-based talk radio show? So this is good. Hopefully everybody else in the American audience isn't getting too bored with us talking about New Zealand and the copious quantities of scumbaggery that's going on here. But then again, a lot of New Zealanders will listen into the American radio shows and listen to the scumbaggery that's going on here and go, oh, wow, actually, the same stuff is happening at home as it is overseas every time. So you can listen to somebody exposing scumbaggery in any country, and you can be guaranteed that the exact same thing is going on right at home. And this is the good part about having a global truther movement, is we can all work together and we can all focus on our own little things, and they automatically apply pretty much everywhere in much the same way. And Penny Bright's been campaigning for Goodness knows. How long has it been now, Penny, that you've been an activist and general thorn in the side of the scumbags in Parliament?
Well, I'm in my 58th year, and I became an activist when I was 18. But we will.
Right.
Oh, we will. Yeah.
It takes a toll on you, doesn't it?
Oh, I'm not yet in my prime. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's interesting, but I mean, you know, you end up with experience that you won't get out of a book, and what you find is that things overlap and that your skills you develop in one area become really useful somewhere completely different. So, no, it's all good. But, just before I get more back into Pike River Mine, I'd just like to say, as an activist, one of the big lessons that I'd like to pass on to everyone else out there was if you deal with matters on an issue-by-issue basis, it took me 50 years to work this one out, then that's how you maximise your effectiveness. Because if everyone has to agree on everything, you'll have three people, and that ain't effective. So you can agree on some things and agree to disagree on others or have a civilised debate about it, but that's the secret, in my view, is you work on an issue-by-issue basis.
I think that's absolutely true, and it dovetails with something that I've said a lot, because I actually learned it on early on in the piece, that it doesn't matter whether somebody's a socialist or a right-winger or anything like that. You'll find, if you keep talking to them just in an open and honest manner, that they're generally just good people and they will agree with reasonable things. And what you should do then is take that agreement that you have with these people who perhaps may in general just have an opposing view and just run with it, because you'll never get anything accomplished if your goal is not to agree with people, but your goal is just to argue with people.
Well, you never get anywhere. Well, the other thing I've learned as well is that it's through debate that you sharpen up your own arguments, because everyone agrees with everybody, then you don't actually sort of, you know, sharpen the debate, and you need to have an opposing viewpoint, and it makes you think more. And I mean, that's what it should be about. Freedom of expression is all about being able to have debate the issues without getting personal and nasty, you know, and that's another really important thing as well. But anyway, back to this Pike River coal mine. What happened here, for people not familiar with this, back on November the 19th, 2010, there was a massive methane explosion at Pike River coal mine, and 29 miners ended up dying. And when that first happened, the police were called in to supervise, take control of the situation, which is pretty much coal mining. There was no attempt.
Oh, Penny's dropped off there again. It's unfortunate. We do have a little bit of technical difficulties here. Hopefully she'll be able to come back up in a few minutes. What I was thinking is that this whole Pike River mine thing, and for those of you who don't know, 19 miners died. I almost said 19 hijackers. 19, or was it 26? Or something around that. Tens of people died, and it's come up as like this big mystery, and the trial's still going on, still don't know what caused it or anything like that, and this dude has written a document called Murder at Pike River Mine, which I thought was very, very interesting. I haven't read the document as yet, but there's a couple of interesting flags to mention. For instance, the first people on the scene would probably have been police, right? Because police get to those situations. Once an emergency is called, policeman's the first to arrive to a scene. The policeman who arrived first on the scene was very surprised that the New Zealand Army was already there. Allegedly, a demolitions division. Following this massive explosion in the mine, which killed a whole bunch of people, that conveniently served as a massive pretext for the government to start saying that going down into regular mines is too dangerous, and now we need to start open cast mining in national parks, which is precisely what the government has been trying to do this whole time. So just think about the convenience of it. And think about the suspicion of it. Why were the military there? Why were they? How did they get there before the police who got the emergency call out of it? See, the suspicious mind in me kind of goes, I think that they might have just blown it up as a pretext. Maybe they murdered them. Maybe they just used it as a pretext to get their agenda through. I don't know. But what I do know is that when you're talking about a West Coast town with miners, and miners are a very close-knit community, as I've heard. My father was a miner in Australia at one point. And what happens is this community kind of comes together, and they're all in shock, absolute devastating shock. And they're miserable. They're completely upset. The safety standards at the mine were about as laxative gets. You know, we have like two inspectors or something like that through the whole country to inspect every single mine in the place. It's insane. There's like virtually no fail-safe mechanisms. The escape route that they were supposed to get up was like a ladder going up through a hole in the roof sort of thing. And nobody had ever even done a single drill on that ladder. Not to mention, even if they did, they'd find it really hard to get out. You ever try getting up on a ladder when you've got nothing but space around you? It's not actually that hard because you can just get up there. You don't have to worry about where your elbows are going, where your knees are going, or how far back you are, or where your head's going, or anything like that. You don't have any of these things. Whereas in Pike River, on the other hand, they had a ladder going straight up through a hole. And that's notoriously difficult to get yourself out of, let alone getting yourself out of in a hurry, let alone getting yourself up with another 20-odd people coming up at the exact same time while you're running away from a fracking fireball. You know, it's insane. And what I find truly diabolical about all of this is not the lack safety procedures. It's not the government's evil agenda or whatever. It's the fact that the owners and all of those people involved with Pike River are remaining very tight-lipped about it, and they're not taking any responsibility for any of their failings. And also another terrible part about it is that the families can never have any peace because of this. Okay, the families themselves have lost their men, and it's just too much for them to bear. You know, imagine you lost a loved one, and you would never find out why or how it happened. And imagine if you wanted to go get their bodies, and you can, but there's a bunch of bureaucratic douchebags there who say that, oh, it's too dangerous, oh, you can't go in there, you can't do that, you can't... Can't do anything. It's a shame. And I feel that it's something that the country really needs to be cognizant of, that these types of big, wide-scale industrial accidents, they often occur in suspicious circumstances. For instance, do you remember a while back, I think it might have been in Chile or Argentina or something like that, one of the big mines collapsed and those guys were stuck down there for a couple of weeks or whatever, and they had to drill a hole down to bring them up in these baskets and this bizarre birthing ceremony sort of thing. And the machine that they were using to do that was called the Phoenix 2. What does the Phoenix do? It rises from the ashes. So that's nice and occult there, isn't it? What happened the day before that, that they all went down into that mine? Oh, wait, didn't they get all new uniforms with great sun symbolism and stuff all over the place? And there was a whole bunch of other freaky coincidences as well, allegedly. So you have a look at these big industrial accidents, and you wonder to yourself, was it really an accident? Does everything stack up? And in many cases, no, it doesn't. I'm afraid that you are basically, and I include myself in this, we're merely pawns to be sacrificed in some crazed maniac's game. And I mean that in a very serious sense, because these people who would do such things, who would stage such events, are obviously completely nutty. Okay, it's something that we have to pay more attention to, mainly because it's about innocent people and protecting them from the whims of diabolical scumbaggery. That's all I have to say about that. Coming up next segment, we'll have Roy Harlow from Rush FM in Hamilton, the very first New Zealand radio station to start playing the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We'll be right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen.
And that of everyone you know depends on it. Women and children, front lines, log on, tune in, stand and be counted. Wounded station in the belly of the vulture. Wash your back, there's no civilians. Women, children, front lines, listen. Consider this a distant early warning. The fire's imminent, pollution gathering dust particles funneling through smokestacks, airwaves, bandwidth, disinformation to fed. Check the labels, delete the virus, alert the masses.
Welcome here to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, ladies and gentlemen. Broadcasting live from Auckland. Nice little fluoridated capital of New Zealand here. The old sunny slave South Pacific just sparkles in the sun showers that we're having right now. My very special guest joining me from the Tron, the city of the future, the city of Agenda 21, where he has his radio station running there, exposing copious quantities of scumbaggery. Roy Harlow, welcome to the show, mate.
Good to be with you, Vinny, and welcome to everybody. Good to be on air.
Now, isn't that lovely? It's a New Zealander hosting an American show, interviewing an American who's living in New Zealand. Well, you've been here since the 70s or something, haven't you, Roy?
Yeah, we're called Crosstown Traffic.
and I'm sure you got out of the States for the same reason that a lot of people are now, because, basically, it's turning into Nazi Germany.
I can't believe the changes. The rapidity is astonishing. The way they're pulling all the stops to try to keep control. I don't see it as sustainable, but boy, they do hold a lot of the cards.
Yeah, yeah. And you yourself, you're running rushfm.co.nz. So if anybody listening to the show is in Hamilton, you can listen to that show all the time. They play clips of the Vinnie Eastwood Show and many others on there, trying to wake people up in the little short snippet sound bites and what have you. You know, kind of like Fox News.
Yeah, we've taken a different formatting. And we are streaming on rushfm and .co.nz. And we've taken the concept, you know, everybody's too distracted. There's just so much information. It's the overload's got to be filtered. So we decided rather than contributing, we'd go ahead and do some of the editing for you and put the concentrated. It happens in all of us of a broadcaster's point of view where you come to a point you feel like you got to get this out. And when you do, it's like a summary of 10 years worth of work. And it can really help people that are just waking up to certain serious subjects.
Oh, yeah. It's too true that there is too much info out there. There's more than anybody could learn. And I've found I kind of like almost given up on trying to know it all because I've figured out that it's impossible. But I can get to the point where I at least have a mild understanding of most things. And that's about as best as I'll get.
Well, that's kind of what we're doing. We've mottoed Rush FM from the point of view of be advised of those subjects that directly affect your life. That's all you can do. There is too much information.
Yeah, yeah. So it's kind of like one of those conversations where you want the person to get to the point, just tell me what I need to know. And I think that's kind of what the radio industry just sort of has to start really changing into as just a network. It's kind of like an emergency broadcaster in a FEMA sense of the word, you know.
Disaster.
This is not a test. You're all screwed by the New World Order.
Well, it is a disaster, and, you know, we have to recognize we have responsibility as broadcasters to put facts through. The amount of disinformation is scary, and we call it spam radio, and we've done a lot of spots that are quite funny at that area, and because it's just distraction. There's no substance.
The mainstream media is just sort of, they've abdicated all position of credibility to my mind. You know, I mean, they just recently have started listening a bit more to Penny Brighton and are starting to look into the Hewlett wealth management and the corruption in the finance companies and what have you. But as always, whenever the media does something right, it's always too little, too late, and it's already been exposed by the alternative media way long ago. And on top of that, they come out smelling like roses, and I just don't think they deserve that.
Well, I think part of it is that the people kind of welcome the distraction. They don't really want to have to be responsible for their lives and the assault that's being waged from so many sectors. I mean, the misinformation thing is really intense. I'll give you a subject that I'd like to bring up here. I've been working. Well, two things have happened. One is some of my work, and another thing is something I've been sensing personally. I've been having trouble sleeping. And I'm going, that ain't me. I work my butt off, and when I lay down, I'm done. And I can't understand why sleeping's a problem. And I've been finding that late at night on a very subtle plane, there's some sort of interference, and I've started trying to find out what the. Well, I'm one of those lucky guys that has a smart meter on his house. So I did some researching, and I got my chicken wire out, and I completely encased my meter in chicken wire, and by gosh, it reduced it significantly. That was a big help. But the other side of it that I was surprised about is I've recognized, and I have an article, I'll give you a few pieces out of it, but I've realized that they're using the cell phone towers to broadcast brainwave modulation changes over the population during the night.
Yeah, psychotronic weaponry.
Yes, that's actually what they're doing, and it's for dumbing down and submission. And, you know, let's be honest, if you don't get a good night's sleep 25 nights in a row, you're just not on your best. You're not your sharpest.
Oh, and not to mention, there's a hell of a lot more things that you just cease caring about.
Well, that's true. Your priorities change. That's right, because you can't cope with the normal amount of information, and we all have information overload one day or another. So there's an article I picked it up yesterday by a psychologist in Europe, in Britain actually, who says that they're gonna sweeten people's dreams by using their smartphones. Now you place the phone by the bed and it can detect when the sleeper is not moving, which signifies that the oncoming of the dream state, and it then plays a carefully crafted soundscape designed to invoke pleasant scenes, such as walking in the woods or lying on the beach. Yeah, right. So they're bombarding us. They're able to do it through our phones, and most people use their phone as their alarm. And so they're bombarding us, our brain wave patterns, by using the cell phone. Now, you look at the capacity they have in cell phones. They can do 50,000 calls off your local tower, no problem. So it's pretty easy for them to more or less target some individuals they don't like, and then in general, impact on the society. So I recognize it's happening. I've been talking about it for months, and this article kind of helped me to realize that, yeah, it's actually come out now. Some of the universities are testing on it for the good guys' side and use of the technology. But we know that these technologies come out after the powers that be use them for their nefarious acts. So I think what we're seeing is many sectors of the human population globally are being mind controlled while they sleep through the use of cell phone towers. And because the accuracy and the effectiveness they have is so good, they can call your phone, not my phone, even though we're sitting side by side. Similarly, they can call this person's brain or that person's brain, and they can just target anybody they want. And as you see through the media, Google, Facebook, whoever, they all want your phone number.
Yeah, so, I never give my phone number. I don't care whether Gmail wants it or YouTube wants it, and I don't care why they want it. I ain't giving them my cell phone number.
That's right. That's right. Well, that's probably why you can still go on air and do this show so effectively.
Well, I think that might be the coffee. But yeah, speaking of sleep deprivation, the real curious thing I find about all these different psychotronic weaponry is the fact that they've become so widespread so quickly and virtually nobody noticed. And now that it's all in there, it's all been installed, it's kind of like, what do we do now? You know, because you can't go and grab that smart meter and just rip it out, can you?
No, they won't allow it. That's right. They say they own the box and the meter on the side of your house. So I just encased mine in small mesh chicken wire, and it's affected everybody's sleep patterns in the house. We're all doing better.
Mm-hmm. Maybe try razor wire next time, so when the guy comes out to try and check the smart meter. In fact, they don't even need to come out and check the smart meters manually, do they? Because they're connected to the internet.
That's right, and that's the point. They're constantly, every 4 seconds, they make a link. So you're getting a signal impact across your house, through your house, through your people in the house, on an every 4 to 5 second basis. That's why they're so dangerous.
And,
it's like
and also
being on the phone, making a phone call every 4 or 5 seconds.
And the other side of it is, well, not only do they disrupt your sleep patterns and whatever, but they also can give you headaches and all of this other kind of stuff, which is why the Blue Shield and the guys from Blue Shield who are mutual acquaintances of ours are so dang useful at this particular point in time, because, hey, if you can't protect yourself from all this EMF stuff, and that basically they've made it illegal to protect yourself from this kind of stuff by going to the source and taking out that smart meter. You know, that I'm acting under the assumption they don't give you the option of whether or not you want a smart meter or an analog one, do they?
No, they just do it. They come in and say they want to check or alter or upgrade the meter, and that's all they tell you. As they did it to us last September. And they just said they wanted to look and upgrade the meter. And I didn't realize what it meant at the moment. And within 10 minutes, it was done. He was gone.
Right. It's like a hit and run. And except the weapon that they're using kind of sits there and keeps blasting everybody just until it disappears. Now, what if, and this is the interesting thing, because I'm starting to get really ticked off with the New World Order to the point in which I'm starting to almost think that vigilante justice could be justified, particularly if you're wiping out very dangerous technology that's there that has virtually no useful purpose. And smart meters, I think, comes under that. Speed cameras.
I agree with that, but I think we have to define it as self-defense.
Mm.
That's really what we're doing. We have a right to protect our brainwave patterns, as like we do our home or our car or anything else. And this is the point. This is invisible attack. And that's why it's taking so long for the people to come out of their confidence in government and recognize that we're actually all being attacked. It's because it's invisible. It's electromagnetic attack. It's poisons in the food, in the air, et cetera, that's not seen. I mean, everybody nowadays, you need to have a poison kit and a Geiger counter and several other devices to protect your EM sensors, to protect yourself from the onslaught. It's not things that you've chosen. These are things that have been imposed. And really, we need to have those instruments that give us the ability to analyze what's being done to us.
Yeah, I just fantasize that one day I'll wake up and I'll look down the street this way or the other and just see all these smart meters have been ripped up, that the and all this wholesale destruction of surveillance and psychotronic weaponry has just been taken out. You know, it's just like as if everybody just kind of got the same idea this one day. Ironically, it'd be funny though, Roy, what if we could hack into this system and then broadcast a signal to people telling them to destroy their smart meter?
Well, I think that the broadcast thing is that you may have the ability before very long to broadcast right into people's brains.
Imagine the Vinnie Eastwood
this mechanical
show.
Equipment.
The Vinnie Eastwood show, live from your pineal gland.
Really? Really? Just like that. Yeah. Well, what could be said? We know that we're, I don't know, some people say 10, 15, 20 years behind the technology revolution in what's released to the public. And it's not difficult for any of us to see how you can advance that theory a little bit further and a little bit further and a little bit further to where, really, we're still living in the old caveman era of the electronics age. There's a lot more sophisticated stuff that they've got out there that, well, isn't public knowledge or isn't public equipment yet.
Now, I've got a question in here from the chat room about Organite. Do you know what Organite is, Roy?
What is?
Organite.
No, I don't. Organite.
No. Yeah. Oh, well, Freighter X makes them, these kind of little crystal-type thingies, which allegedly do the same thing as Blue Shield. I don't know. I haven't tried them yet, but...
Orgon technology. Yes, I know what they are. The issue there is I don't... Those are like... how do I say it? They're their own generating source. They're not powered. I've had this discussion with Mark, the designer of the Blue Shield, about that concept of having it powered by battery or having it naturally irradiation, shall we say. And the Blue Shield gives a stronger current and a more consistent current because it does have battery support for broadcasting. I know what the subject is. It's like there's several other types of devices that are either individually charged or have their own radiation principles. But those that have a battery, they have ability to intensify or to increase the coverage. Blue Shield's coverage is quite good. The meter and a half, 2 meters, 3 meters, 15 meters, et cetera. That's significant because we are being bombarded on that big a scale.
Mm-hmm. It's true. It's very true. And it happens to me on occasion, even still now, because I remember about, I think it might have been a year and a half, 2 years ago or something like that, I left home without my Blue Shield. And I was like, oh, God, what is that? So I feel it kind of, it was almost like every muscle in my body was just starting to tense up and I was starting to feel a little bit ill or something like that. Ran back inside, grabbed the Blue Shield and like, oh, it went away. And then yesterday, same thing. Just left the Blue Shield inside on the desk and just went outside, even into the back garden. We've got these power lines and what have you back there. You'd figure in West Auckland, surrounded by trees and a garden or everything, you'd be sweet as and safe from electromagnetic radiation. But no, same thing happened again. Like, oh, God, what is that? Run back inside, grab the Blue Shield, boom, goes away. In fact, I didn't even have to get to my Blue Shield. All I needed to do was get inside. And then I've got this one that does a 15-meter, the little plug-in Blue Shield, and all of a sudden it went away. Went back outside with my portable one and never came back. It's amazingly actual. It really is effective,
Yes, it
does
is.
Make a difference, a noticeable difference. But the problem is that once you first
counter them.
Yeah, once you first
there
get them.
An attack going on to our psychological being, and this is the counter device.
It's like a circle of protection. It's like a circle of protection. It's like magic technology. And I love it because that's precisely what it says it'll do, and that's precisely what it does. It's not BSing you.
I'd like to comment on. You hit a point there. We are in the era of invisible attack. Nowadays, you don't see tanks and guns and soldiers coming up to you. Nowadays, the attack is invisible. It's electromagnetic, a lot of it, pulse waves, et cetera, et cetera. We have to recognize that's one of the symptoms of assault on the humans. It's an invisible assault. And this is why we have so much trouble, and they intend this, that we have so much trouble waking people up because they find it hard to believe. They still have the concept that the government's there to protect you and guide you and your vote counts and all that nonsense. And so they don't realize that, wait a minute, there's technologies that are totally invisible. And those technologies are not being used for the betterment of humanity, just like weather modulation. We could all have wonderful crops and wonderful summers. But no, they're using it. They're weaponizing it. They're demonizing it. And this is something I run into on the radio show. I'm pretty blatant in our spots and our quotes we put out. There is a demonic mentality group of people who are aggressive. That's
exactly
what we're facing.
And we've got to get defensive about it, and not in the social situation. You said something bad about me, I'm going to get defensive about it. It's more like we're under attack. You need to get defensive actions going. We'll be right back.
It's invisible.
I got some so-called friends. They'll smile right to my face. All when my back is turned.
They install smart meters at my place. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the show that's all about invisible radiation enemies. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasted live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. My very special guest is Roy Harlow. Now, Roy, you're actually a bit of an inventor as well, aren't you?
Yeah, I invented myself, actually.
Yeah, yeah. Kind of like the Beatles.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you've got
several things. We're just trying to give people some independence. I'm working right now with a we've miniaturized the concept of plastic recycling into diesel fuel, and we're
I saw this on a video. Some Japanese guy, you just put plastic in the machine and it turns it into oil.
Yeah, well, we've miniaturized it so you can own one for your own home. And you can actually recycle all of your personal equipment. And we're just finishing with it. We got to make sure that all the dioxins and there's no emissions coming out. We got that. That's the final piece, is getting consistent supply there. But, yeah, we're going to launch a range, three different sizes of products that you can plug in your garage and process all your own plastic into diesel fuel for your car or a generator.
Cool, man.
So, yeah, this has been about a 10-month engineering hiatus, and we've pulled it together now. We've built the first prototype and trialed, tested, and it's been fully successful. And we've already sold that unit. We've got now we're taking orders for more units. They're coming off now. We're just getting ready. We just signed up for a building, and we're putting together all the supplies and contractors, and we're ready to go into building these small furnaces. And it's about the size, I say it's a big 2-drawer file cabinet. And that will give you about 25 liters, 29 liters for one, let's call it burn. So it's a furnace that heats up your plastic, melts it, gasifies it, recondenses it, filters it, ready to put in either a car or a generator.
Choice. So well,
you can pull for your neighbor's milk bottle, you know.
I would love to see that, because then the recycling would actually have something properly, you know, decent and useful done with it. Because at the moment, as far as I'm aware, most of our recycling just basically gets dumped on ships and taken away to China to get dumped in places where Chinese peasants pick over the trash piles and get sick while looking for all this mercury-based crap everywhere that they can sell back to the Apple Corporation or something.
That's true with e-waste, but the plastic waste, they're doing what we should be doing. They're actually recycling the plastic into fuel, and a lot of it's going direct to electricity. So we have some bigger ones on design. I'm working with some things there, and we're going to actually try to produce distributive energy generation plants from the waste so that the plastic is going into gas that's running generators that's powering homes.
Now, what would you think about, say, you know how the oceans are now completely inundated with plastics waste, and it's kind of turned into sort of like this plastic soup, particularly in the in fact, there's a couple of big regions where the currents converge, like the Northern Pacific, Southern Atlantic, where it's just basically this big plastic soup wasteland or something like that.
Plastic.
What I'd love to see, Roy, is kind of like a large scale dredging operation to get all that plastic out of there, and then just toss it into one of your machines and convert it into energy.
Well, that's the point. We're sitting here on a bonanza worth of energy potential. We have plastic contamination all over the planet, and it's another negative side to the fossil fuel dependency. And we have the opportunity as individuals to take that plastic and turn it into our own resource. So what we're trying to do as a company is provide them the equipment they need to make that possible. It's simple as that. And, you know, everybody gets greedy and they go, oh, I'm going to make a machine that makes energy out of plastic, so I'm going to sell energy and own it. And I've taken the other tack. Let's empower the people with a machine that they go ahead and produce their own energy and their friends, associates, what have you. It empowers the world from waste to standing around. All we need is the equipment. Well, that's what we're trying to do. Provide them that equipment on the scale that's relative to their problem.
This is why the climate change movement doesn't make sense to me, because they think that a problem is always solved by something financial or by stopping yourself from doing something, right? Like, I'm not going to buy that particular product. I'm not going to do this. Whereas I'm kind of a bit more technically minded, and I think to myself, okay, we've got a big problem. How can we solve this problem? As opposed to, we've got a big problem. How can we screw up and mess up everybody's life and economic activity in order to hand the world over to a dictatorial communist world government?
Exactly. You know, they don't listen.
Technological solutions, people.
It doesn't matter how much you protest. They don't listen. They don't care about us. So, okay, if they've contaminated our planet with plastic, let's just take it as though they've put resources all over the planet for us. If we develop the minimal amount of equipment and technology that we can so everybody can easily use it, then we take all this crap they've laid around and turn it into our own resources so we're not dependent on them any longer. I mean, you know, Vinny, that there is many, many good technologies that have been stood on and stifled and what have you, and that the technologies aren't really rocket science. They're just the next step forward that they don't want us to take. They want us dependent, and we need to guard our independence.
Yeah, it's not entirely different to national defense and national security as far as I'm concerned, because it's kind of like on the smaller scale, if you can keep yourself independent, if you can keep yourself chugging and you don't need anybody else, you're independent. Then all you do is just apply that gradually. You know, you get one more person, then one more person. And eventually, somewhere down the track, way more people are far more independent and the government loses its hold on them. You know, because at the moment, just with energy, for instance, you know, what have we got, like 5 electricity companies operating in New Zealand, and they're all government-owned, acting as a cartel.
Sure, and it's happening globally. They're trying to cartel most everything, food, water, power, all the essentials of life. This is called demonic mentality. It's not a matter of your opinion, my opinion any longer. This is one group of people exploiting another group of people. And we need to use our skills, abilities, trainings, what have you, to liberate ourselves back to normal. We're not trying to become the next level of bastards. We're trying to get out from under the primary level and just be back to the rights and independence, human rights concepts that we all actually deserve.
Yeah, and the demonic mentality is pretty self-evident when at least you look into it, because it doesn't actually hide that far below the surface, I've found.
No.
You know, you have a look at all these people. It's just basically, if you understand the satanic principles and mentality, it basically becomes a brief explanation of how government policy is formed. Do I worship Lucifer? Yes. Do I want to enslave all the servants of God? Yes. Okay, cool. Let's become government officials then.
Well, yeah, it, you're right. It is a good over evil in principle, but the way they manifest it is the tricky part. In reality, we just need to protect what is, I guess, God-given rights. There is enough resources here on the planet for everybody that's here. This overpopulation thing is way overstressed. If we weren't misusing the resources, there's plenty. And that's kind of what I think we're all trying to do as the alternative media. We're trying to wake up to the fact that if we work intelligently and collectively and without greed, we can get by. We can do without these so-called governments, and we can do without this corporate overview. We don't need them telling us what we need. We have our own intuitive intelligence, and we should be allowed to exercise it. That's what they're trying to take away. They're trying to take away that independent spirit.
Now, you talked about food, fuel, and water. Now, you've got a device where you can make your own fuel from trash, and I think that's freaking perfect. What about making water or making food? Are technological devices for that? Because I have a friend who's starting to become interested in using pyramids to grow food inside. There's something about pyramids that channels energy right down in a very perfect symmetrical way or something like that, and it makes plants grow like 2 to 3 times faster.
Yeah. Well, the issue is protecting heritage varieties of plants. And the other issue is trying to protect ourselves from the acidification through chemtrail spraying onto the soil. So, you know, in the basic sense, the people should start out thinking about a self-sufficiency concept, and food's going to have to be grown in greenhouse concepts. So you choose what water your plants get, and you maintain the balance in the nutrition in the soil. This is really the bottom line for all of us, because man lives from the land. Our nutrients come from the soil. So we have to find a way of protecting that, even on a limited scale. We should be working together collectively, but the misinformation kings of the world are very active in breeding dependency on their chemicals and their, well, toxicity, really.
Mm, to the point in which they almost can't grow crops without their chemical fertilizers.
Well, they want to go there. They're heading for that. I mean, I got in trouble. I got in trouble a year ago because I said that balanced fertilizer, which is an NPK, elemental-based fertilizer, shouldn't be allowed to sponsor the environmental awards because they are one of the biggest contaminants of our agricultural sector. And all of the people that were getting money from those groups came out and got upset with me. And I said, but let's look at it. You show me where they are actually benefiting agriculture. And they're going, well, they sell all these billions of dollars of product. And I'm going, that's not proof. We're talking about soil analysis here and sustainability. And when you look at it from that point of view, we can take care of ourselves. We don't need these massive corporations pushing chemicals and, oh, now it's GMO. Onto the people, the farmers of the world. There's such an onslaught on the farmers right now. It's a real tragedy in the making. The young people don't want to go into farming because it's such a heavy debt issue. And the older people are getting sick and tired of it. They're hardly making money and everything's always coming down on them. And most of the businesses target farmers as a guaranteed income and things like that. But we have to wake up. In the 20s, 28, 29, 30, 28% of the people lived off of the land, were directly agriculture-based. And now we're down to 2 or 3%. So as our economy collapses and civilizations looking for alternatives, we've got to go back to the land. But the knowledge and the resources and the available free arable land has been altered dramatically by this onslaught of the big corporations, such that they're trying to make it, we have to buy their crap chemical-based food. So this is, I mean, like Alex Jones mentioned this the other day with Mike Adams. They're saying, it's your duty to grow your own food. It's patriotic. And it is. It keeps your head working right. And this is what people aren't looking at. You have to protect your consciousness. It used to be they would attack you with taxes or they'd attack you with regulations, but now they're EMF attacking your brainwave patterns and what you consciously pay attention to. So you have to be very conscious of where are you putting your attention span and protecting your brain from onslaught of EMFs. This is why I'm such an advocate of Blue Shield, which I know you're very supportive of too. But we have to look at this as a society now. I'm totally convinced, as we talked about a few minutes ago, that cell phone towers are being used against the populace at night. They're microwaving and heating us up, and they're changing our dreamscape, and they're changing our ability to get rest from our sleep with cell phone towers. And this is an invisible attack on humanity, and we've got to be aware of it. We've got to wake up to the fact that not all of our thoughts are our thoughts anymore.
Well, they may be invisible attacks, but they're not imperceptible. Like, you can feel them.
Agreed.
You can know when those things are being installed. And I find the trick is that they put all these things in your face, but they don't tell you what they do. You know,
it's like
Botox, for example. Get some Botox; it'll take out your wrinkles. Really, what does Botox mean? Oh, it means botulism toxin. What?
Yeah. Well, that's true. The art of marketing and advertising has turned into a really nasty thing. The reality is we need to really disconnect from a lot of the stuff and go back to the basics of what is required for a healthy consciousness and a healthy body and a healthy contribution, because our society needs informed and serious contributors to the mindset. Everybody's looking at contribution to the economy, but we need serious contribution to the mindset, to accepting that we do have what we need. Every individual out there has the capacity to be perfect at their respective talent. So we have the world preaching to us, nobody's perfect. But everybody has a role to play. Everybody has a place. And we need to find that place, find that role, and find happiness, find security, and find intelligence by being expert at our particular capability, our forte. And we're not being encouraged to achieve anything like that.
You're kind of breaking up, getting a little bit digitor there, you know, in the Transformers Megatron sense of the word. I'm not sure. Okay. It's not quite so screwed up anymore, but we're coming up to break now anyway. Roy Harlow, rushfm.co.nz, ladies and gentlemen. Go check out that little website if you are living in the Tron. And even if you're not, there's still some many, many interesting things that are being played on that radio station as well. So we'll be right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen, at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com.
Oh, no, no. There's only one thing I need to know, whose side you want, whose side you want. Well, there's only one thing I need to know, whose side are you on?
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Vinnie Eastwood Show, the lighter side of genocide. Welcome one and all. Test tube babies and natural borns, those with and without plugs, born in the matrixy city of Zion. My very special guest is Roy Harlow, who's also coming at us from the city of the future, city of Agenda 21, Hamiltron. Now, what was I talking about? Oh yes, standard of living. If you want to have a decent economy or a decent society or whatever, the quality of your standard of living seems to be, I think, one of the most important things to look at. So you have so if you analyze what the standard of living is, let's say a level that we want to be able to live under. Personally, I want to have as much electricity as I need. I'm not going to, you know, start smelting aluminium in my backyard or something like that, using thousands of megawatt hours from a local power station or anything like that, just running my computers and what have you. I want as much electricity as I need, as much food as I need, and as much water as I need, and as much energy to get around when I want to, when I need to, you know, fuel for the car and what have you. Those are the basic things that you really need to maintain your standard of living. That and internet, of course. So let's have a look at how all these things are being under attack. And let's not forget your health. You see, all of those things just described here about how you maintain your standard of living and how you actually measure whether or not your standard of living is good, is all getting much, much worse, much more expensive, much more contaminated. Your food's getting contaminated. Your water's being purposely contaminated with fluoride and chlorine. Goodness knows how many other bazillions of alchemical notions that they're putting on in there. Your houses, on the other hand, you know, the majority of them in New Zealand aren't frickin' insulated. And we even have people who die. Like people in New Zealand, a country that's not actually really that cold, freeze to death in their homes because the insulation in this country is just that bad, you know? And then they take a look at the fuel prices. They're all controlled by the Seven Sister fuel companies, which are all basically Rockefeller or Royal Dutch Shell or Queen of England owned. So they don't give a frack about you whatsoever. Hiking up the prices, buying out their competition, shutting down oil refineries all over the place. There's apparently oil tankers all over the world right now that are full, that are just sitting there in dock waiting to unload onto refineries because these big massive oil cartels shut down their competition and forced the prices up. So all of these separate things that we're being attacked by, I think you coined it pretty well earlier there, Roy, it's about fighting back, a self-defense.
Well, self-defense is really self-sufficiency. If we can remove our dependency off of these massive approaches to resources, that's the only way we're going to have independence. We need that independence because their plan isn't to stop when they have the energy side of it sorted out or the food side of it sorted out. They're actually attacking our consciousness. They're doing brainwave modulation nonsense. I mean, we've all seen the pictures of monkeys with electrodes coming out of their heads. Well, that was many, many years ago, and they've sophisticated it with the sophistication of electronics. So you know they're playing in your heads. We talked about it last segment. They're using cell phone towers at night to change your brainwave fluctuations. They're saying they're going to give you good experiences and give you nice dreams, but they're actually making you tired and they're making you compliant. So the biggest thing I see for the future is self-sufficiency as an individual, as a family, as a group, community, nation, whatever you can do. New Zealand is a prime opportunity to be self-sufficient, but we aren't even negotiating with the oil companies who are crawling over us like spiders right now for our oil and resources. We're not even negotiating that we get our resources produced from our own natural resources. We're not getting that even in the equation. So we're being hung out to dry even by our government and the corporates involved and the international platform. So it's down now to what can we do as intelligent people to extradite ourselves from this continued corporate dominance of everything, right down to what we think.
It's like starting again. It's kind of like you go through primary school. You know, you spend your first 5-10 years there or something like that. Then you go into secondary school. You spend 2 years. Then you go into high school and you spend another 5-6 years there or whatever. And then you get out in university and you spend 3 years there. And after you finish university and you go into the workforce, you realize you just wasted your entire life learning stuff that didn't matter and you have to start again.
Well, we're kind of like that because they've been making us attracting us more and more and more to screens, and yet we're not able to take care of ourselves. We don't produce our own food. We don't produce our own energy. We don't produce or protect our own water. The basics of life that we're counting on are actually what they're, with stealth, they're attacking. And so we have to wake up to that. We have to unify as a family, as a community, as a nation, whatever we've got, that we're really on our own. It's time for the good people to get together because the bastards are definitely getting together and attacking our resources. So this is, I think, the shift. We have to recognize that nobody's going to do it for us and that we do have the ability inherent in our own intelligence to cooperate with each other, to look beyond the bodily differences, to see the struggle for existence as something we can overcome and start acting like, well, the more enlightened humanity. This society is being run by crazy people. So if we just act, you know, normal, it'll be enlightenment. And we can do it. We can extradite ourselves from this constant dependency, which is their whole modus operandi.
Yeah, yeah. It comes down to this whole, we don't need them anymore mentality. Like, you know, when you leave home for the first time, and you know you turn 18, you've got a job, you're flatting or whatever, and you realize that you don't need your parents anymore. They can't tell you to go and wash the dishes anymore because you're not living there. They can't tell you to eat your Brussels sprouts because they're not cooking your dinners anymore. You're doing it all yourself, right? And I think this is kind of what humanity has to do as a whole, is that the New World Order has built our homes and has raised us, and now it's time for us to go out on our own and learn and prosper by ourselves and hopefully not have to return home after failing miserably.
Well, you don't have to. There's no reason, because the standard of living is miserable, actually. We don't recognize how much suffering we're going through. That's part of the trick of this whole human engagement. We don't realize how absolutely ridiculous it is to do the 9-to-5 thing and to sit in front of the television at night. It's totally ridiculous. It's programming, straight, pure, daily, 24 hours. You'd just be amazed at what you're capable of or how ingenious you might be if you're using your time and your capabilities on something that makes the struggle for existence far less. We don't need to be in this dependent capacity. That's part of the illusion that they're pushing on us. They want us to be dependent for enjoyment, and that's what they're doing. We watch the television. I think the television is the biggest problem we're facing.
Well, the television can be used to reprogram people, though, I've found. Well, maybe not the television, but certainly the computer screen if you're watching documentaries and what have you. That's how I woke up, Roy, is just watch documentaries. Yeah, I just watched Doco after Doco, and it kind of woke me up to pretty much everything simultaneously. So it comes down to the fact that television does not broadcast stuff that will wake you up. Television broadcasts stuff that keeps you distracted. The internet, yes. On the other hand, you can choose to either distract yourself or you can choose to learn something.
The problem there is you come from the television and go to the computer and your brainwave pattern and modulation's already been altered and they end up looking at porn instead of looking up self-sufficiency.
Could be worse.
Well, that's kind of where it's at. What are you doing with your brain? Where are you putting your conscious attention? If you just take a look at that and notice what are you doing with your conscious attention, you'll fix your life. But if you negate that fact that you have a responsibility, you'll end up controlled. There's too much of it out there.
It's funny you should mention this, Roy, because I watched like something like 3 or 4 hours of television last night. And while I was watching it, I was thinking to myself, I should be working. I could have accomplished a heck of a lot of work in that 4 hours if I wasn't just sitting here on my ass.
Another thing that I've found happening, this is serious now. This is personal experience here, and I found this with a couple of really talented individuals. All right, there's two fellows I know. They're both in their 30s, and they're very intelligent guys, very talented at what they do, but they've gotten hooked up in this Warcraft game, and they're almost dependent on it. They can't go out and pursue their careers. They can't go out and pursue their capacities and their potentials because they're so attached, subtly, subliminally attached to playing this game. And it's amazing that they're like I said, they're two really intelligent, capable, talented individuals, and they don't even know each other, to be honest, but they're actually showing all the symptoms of mind control, secret ops stuff, that they're unable to lead productive lives. They actually, if you talk to them, they go, yeah, I know I shouldn't be doing this, or I know this isn't good for me, or I know I'm wasting my time, but they still can't stop it.
It's because mind control's addictive.
Issue. Yeah.
Mind control's addictive. And when it comes to games, you just wonder, who's really playing who here? Thanks, Roy, for coming on the show with me today. And, rushfm.co.nz, ladies and gentlemen, if you want to check out more from him. And he also got a little show about farming and what have you on Hamilton Community Radio too. So yeah, thanks Roy, man, it's been awesome.
Good to be with you. Thanks a lot, and thanks to American Freedom Radio.
Indeed, American Freedom Radio, love you guys there, because you just, well, basically give us everything that we need in order to fight the new world order. Basically, a platform, advertising, the whole kit and caboodle. Thank you, guys. You keep us funded, you keep us rolling, and you keep us on air. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening. Thank you for your donations. Thank you for the purchases of those blue shields. Protect yourself, protect your family. Get one today. Click on the banner at AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And we'll see you again tomorrow, ladies and gentlemen, at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com.